views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. There are over 300 million people in the world who are colorblind or have color vision deficiency. In fact, that means that there's 1 in 12 men and about 1 in 200 females that have some sort of colorblindness. And unfortunately, I am one of them, 1 in 200 females, and I get the lucky gene. My color blindness is very, very mild, so I'm lucky. I can pass almost all colorblind tests, but some of those dot tests, you know, those pictures in the dots that they used to sell all the time in the malls, I couldn't see the pictures in the dots a lot of times. It's because my red colorblind, I have muted green, and I don't really see it. Kind of the red-green kind of blends together, which is hard to explain. I don't even know what it really is because I don't know what it's not. It's really interesting. But that being said, there is a company called Enchroma that have figured out lenses for glasses that allow colorblind people to see color for the first time as the way nature intended it. And they don't just have a filter on the lens like a lot of other companies have tried to do, where they change the colors so that you can see the color naturally, but then it distorts other colors. This actually gets to the source of the problem, and they bring more light into your eye so that you can see the colors as the way they're meant to be seen. And they've done a ton of research into this field, and it works for 80%+ of the people that use this. And imagine somebody that only saw gray for green for the first time in their life being able to see the color green. It's just an amazing development, and this is just shows the amazing time that we're alive. So today we are bringing the CEO, Andrew Schmider, to the program, and he is going to talk about their invention and how it works and how they're bringing it to market, who it works for. You can even get prescription lenses for this stuff, and they're working on contact lenses. It's just amazing what is being created. And I guess I'm a little more into it because I have this. I know what it's like to not see pictures, you know, those dot pictures in the mall and not be able to see the picture. My father has it worse than me, where if there's a stop sign that's embedded into, you know, that's amongst a bunch of trees, he can't really see, he can't often see the stop sign. So he has a worse problem than I do. So I'm very excited to have him use these glasses and see how they work. But for me, when I tried them, I was amazed at how much deeper green I could see. It's really fascinating. So we'll learn about how they work, what they do for people, how they work for people, and how you can get them, and what their strategy is for bringing them to market. It's a fascinating discussion that I have about these. And then the other conversation that I have today is going to be how to sell your company for the highest multiple possible. I have Gary Miller from SDR Ventures, and he's amazing. His company, he sold to IBM for the highest multiple in IBM's history. And he now helps companies sell their company. And he's been doing this for quite some time. And he really helps companies get the highest multiple they can and earn the most money they can from their businesses. And you'll learn a bunch about that. So now I'm going to start with the colorblind conversation and welcome Andrew to the program. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So you have an amazing product that they're glasses, but they allow colorblind people to see color. Do they really work?
Yeah, that's right. So about 1 in 12 men or 8% of men are colorblind. And there's different types and extents of what we commonly call red-green colorblindness. And what we've found is that these glasses are effective for about 80% of cases of red-green colorblindness. And if anyone wants to find out, we have a test on our website. You can go there and it'll measure your type and extent and give you a sort of recommendation as to how well the glasses are going to help you.
So now, is it just red-green? You know, people that kind of see colors, but how about people that don't see red at all?
So there's a type of color vision deficiency called protanopia, where people have a very difficult time seeing red. It appears very dark. And that turns out to be the most severe type of color blindness. And it's more difficult to help, although we have had reports of people saying that the glasses do help them when they have protanopia. So once again, you can go to the test and it'll
tell you what you have and whether it can help
exactly.
You. And, and if you can't see green at all, can it help with that?
Yeah. So usually those are called deutans or deuteranomalous. And that's one of the types of red-green color blindness. And usually the Enchroma glasses work quite well with that type. We have basically over a 90% success rate.
So now what do they see when, like, they might just see grays, shades of gray, and then they put on the glasses and they can see green?
Yeah, so actually there's a lot of sort of misconceptions about the nature of color vision deficiencies. And in general, these people can see colors, and often they have a pretty complete color, what we call a color naming vocabulary, but they'll have difficulty perceiving certain particular colors, and they'll often confuse certain combinations of colors. So a very common one is actually blue versus purple. So either they'll see something purple and they kind of won't see the redness to it, and they'll just say, oh, that's blue. And another common one that is confused a lot is pink versus white. So what's kind of interesting is that actually it's usually for a colorblind person, if they were to see red and green, they can usually identify red versus green, but it's actually some of these more subtle combinations that is where the confusion starts to really
when the stuff comes together. That's why you can't see those dot tests and stuff. All those posters that used to be popular where there were pictures inside the dots and
that's right.
You couldn't see it.
Yes.
So now this would fix that for you. If you had glasses on, would you be able to see those pictures?
So the glasses, they're what we call an assistive device, similar to how reading glasses help you focus on that close vision. These glasses can amplify your sense of color in certain situations. But it's also important to note that the glasses are not a cure for color blindness, or they're not necessarily.
Well, they're glasses. You take them off and you're back to normal. Mm-hmm. But it's like putting on a pair of glasses. I can't see the street sign. I put them on, I can see it. So is it like that, where I put my glasses on and now suddenly I can see the pictures in the dots?
I would say it helps you in certain situations, and it doesn't necessarily help you overcome the Ishihara dot pattern test. And this is kind of a complicated topic, but essentially what we know is that there are ways of actually designing glasses that help you essentially cheat on that test. And when we were approaching this project, we really wanted to stay clear of that, those kinds of claims, which go into a type of kind of a not really reputable scientific basis for how the glasses work. So we decided to really approach it from the ground up and say, you know, what are the underlying causes of color vision deficiency? And then we created a computer model that enabled us to sort of quantitatively measure how much improvement a particular lens design could offer a person. And then within there, we optimize and try to maximize the effectiveness. But all that said, at the end of the day, we don't certify that these glasses can be used to pass any particular color vision screening test. And in particular, some of those tests are employed in occupations where having a particular standard of color vision is required. So say you're flying an airplane, it's a very high stakes job potentially.
Sure.
And we're not in a position right now where we can say, oh, these glasses will enable you to do
okay,
that.
So you're protecting your butt. Yeah. You don't want to get into that scenario. And, yes. And people, please don't think that this is going to be a miracle working thing, but can they allow you to see pictures in the dots that you couldn't see before? In some cases, I know you don't want to claim that. I know you don't want to, you know, say that this does work and then people sue you. But for some people, does it really do that?
So here's what I can say is that for some people, if you take these tests, some people, they might be able to improve their score. But these tests are actually used as a screening test. They can be very difficult.
Well, not just the test. I'm just thinking about those posters on the wall. Can I see the picture?
Oh,
that's
like
a poster. Yeah.
Poster.
Because if it's allowing me to bring my red green into proper, you know, dimension, if you will, then I should be able to see some of those things that I couldn't see before.
You know, that's a possibility. We would have to do an experiment to try. But what I can say is that we have some customers who are like artists, like a painter. I know there's this woman in Australia who's been very much enjoying the glasses, and she's a painter. And it's kind of interesting. You can see some of her videos online where she kind of makes a painting and then looks at it again with Achroma glasses and is able to kind of see a new dimension of texture and vibrancy in the color. So.
Well, I have the red green color, but that's why it's so fascinating to me. You sent me those glasses and I put on like, oh, wow. So now is that what average people see? You know, is that what others are seeing and I'm not?
I would say like, you know, for people who have normal color vision, it's hard to understand, you know, what it's like to have color vision deficiency. But generally when you have normal color vision, you know, there's just a much more clear distinction between colors. Like, you know, something is red versus something that's green. Like they seem very dissimilar. Like there's nothing, you know, they're very clearly distinguished. And then we have this, overlap in your red and green, retinal cones. It creates a sort of less of a difference. So it's not as obvious.
Like, so now that's very interesting because we see it different than they do, but they've never seen it the way we have either.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think, if people with normal color vision could, you know, walk in the shoes of a colorblind person for a day, they would really change their opinion about, you know, how the use of color in the world and, you know, how signs and information is presented and stuff like that.
What would they, you mean they would do things?
They would say, oh, wow, you know, this is actually, you know, more of an issue than you might think.
Well, see, I don't have a very severe one. I have a very mild one, but I just putting on those glasses, I was like, wow, this is really beautiful. I mean, more beautiful than what I'm used to. You know what I mean? My eye doctor always told me I probably just compensated and it's pretty mild. But my dad has it worse than I do. And it's, I don't know, I'm pretty excited to try these out in more like going out and around.
Yeah.
But it's just my fascination is that's how everybody else sees the world.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so it's pretty neat. We recommend people wear them for like, you know, a couple of weeks in a variety of different situations at least. And then, you know, you'll see all kinds of new stuff.
Yeah. So. How do you know that they work for people? Like, how do you know that that's that's allowing people that have colorblindness to actually see what the average person sees? How'd you come to that conclusion?
That's a good question. So, I mean, it gets into a kind of a sticky philosophical topic, which is like, hey, how do I know that what I call red is what you call red?
How do you know I'm just not seeing something
completely? Maybe it's flipped around, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's this thing called color naming, which is that there's all these names that we have for colors, and they actually kind of form a structure that makes sense in this particular kind of way. And there are certain colors that are kind of opposites, like hot versus cold. You have like blue versus yellow. It's like something cannot be both blue and yellow at the same time. They're fundamentally opposing. And same thing is true of red versus green. Those are fundamental opposites. So one of the things that people with colorblindness tend to do is they tend to avoid talking about colors because they get kind of confused easily, and they don't want to be embarrassed by calling something the wrong thing. So they just look for other attributes, and they say, oh, that's a, you know, beautiful tree. It's big. It's, you know, it has a lot of leaves, but they, maybe the color might be the last thing that they mention. And what we've been able to see with these glasses is that, in many instances, people, you know, write back to us after wearing them for months, perhaps even, and say, you know, something really interesting is happening now. It just, all this whole world of color just starts to make sense to me now. And it becomes just easier to sort it all out and name the colors correctly. And in some cases, even when they're not wearing the glasses, they have this kind of persistence effect. Like, so they've sort of finally learned their colors correctly, which I think is kind of exciting because that.
Well, see, now, like in my case, I can take color tests and pass them, but I can't do any of the dot tests. You know, once it gets done, I can do some of them, but I can't do like any of the, there's a lot of pictures I can't see.
Yeah. The dot tests are very difficult. There's some other, we have some extra difficult tests that we have here at Enchroma. So when we're testing someone, if they pass some of the basic tests, like the D15 test, then we switch over to the harder version to look for, you know, measurable improvements.
Now, if you wear the glasses for long periods of time, can your eyes kind of adjust? I mean, is there a way to?
I'd say it's more like your brain kind of adjusts. Like it, for example, in one case, there was a recently I was speaking with another reporter, and he's a very strong Dutan, and he actually had the glasses. He had to wear them for about a week, actually, before he started to notice things. And then when he did, he said, he reported positive results. He said, yeah, I'm actually starting to see certain colors now, and I can sort them out correctly. And I thought that was very interesting because he's a very strong case, and it just shows that, you know, sometimes it takes a while for the brain to kind of adapt to that new information.
Oh, I see. But that's why it takes time.
Yeah. So it really depends. Some people are instant, and some people it can take hours or possibly even weeks.
So I notice I have some of the problem with blue and purple. Mm-hmm. Is there a possibility of orange versus red sometimes?
Yes, that can happen. It depends. It's all of these things become more difficult when in certain like visual conditions. So for example, a really common one that people report is the color of stoplights at nighttime, like whether it's a blinking yellow light or blinking red light, that can be very difficult to see. Have you ever had that?
I don't have any of those issues.
Okay.
Well, thank God. I don't want any more issues than I have. My dad has, though. He talks about that.
Traffic tickets and stuff is they can't see. They can't tell if it's a red or yellow light at nighttime.
Oh, that's awful. Because then you can't even tell where it is in the position of the.
Exactly. So you lose that positional information. But really, the reason it's so difficult is because you know, traffic signals are actually, they're far away from you and they actually are very small. So you're not getting very much information from them. Whereas, you know, if it was a large piece of paper that was on your desk, you could more easily identify what color it is.
So are you the only ones at this point who has a product like this?
I think, you know, other companies have tried to bring products to market to help people with color vision deficiency. The first one that we know about commercially was launched in the 70s, and it's like a red contact lens that you wear in one eye. And what it does is it kind of like causes a certain unnatural appearance to certain colors that gives you a clue that the color is there, but it's not really helping your color vision. It's actually exploiting like a binocular difference between your two eyes to sort of give you an extra clue. Mm-hmm. So Inchroma is the first company to come out with a lens product that doesn't do that and actually operates by enhancing the spectral purity of the colors.
It goes to the source issue, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which is just phenomenal. So now what else can you do with this application? Are you starting to be able to see future down the road, things that we can do with technology and that, you know, apply it in other ways?
Oh yeah. I think this will become, you know, an increasingly important area where you see like what we call kind of intelligent filtering lenses. And, you know, with what we have, the kind of know-how that we've put together, there's a lot of potential for us to explore other ideas and other concepts on this platform.
Maybe we're not seeing things that exist in the light spectrum, because we only see a little part of the light spectrum, right?
Well, that's true. That is true. And you know, people would like to have X-ray vision or, you know, see into the ultraviolet like birds do and stuff like that. I don't see that as an immediate possibility for us, but there's definitely room for optimizing this lens to perform best in various situations.
Well, and the technology can be applied farther along. Like that's like a leap forward. But if you start thinking, if you can, you're just doing step one, right? We're letting people see the red, green light spectrum better.
Yeah.
But what happens if we get past the light spectrum that is actually normal for us? You know, that nobody really sees. Maybe other animals. If other animals can see it, we should be able to see it somehow, maybe. You know, there those possibilities? That's really fascinating, because there's some ideas that there's things in our atmosphere and our air and stuff that we can't see, like even little animals and stuff we can't see.
Well, that's true. Yeah. We have a tool called a spectrophotometer, and that kind of gives you a true window into like what's happening in the electromagnetic spectrum across the whole visible into the infrared and stuff like that. So we use that a lot for measuring things to kind of,
So have you seen anything interesting in that?
Oh yeah. I mean, every different kind of, light in the world, has a unique spectral signature. So, you know, whether it's a fluorescent light or an LED light or an incandescent light, you can use a spectrophotometer. You can measure that. And, I mean, this is relevant to the Inchroma glasses actually, because, you know, it's not obvious when you just look at the glass. It looks like a sort of ordinary sunglass lens.
Yep.
But it's actually the transformation of light that it's performing is sort of invisible to your eyes until you look through it. So we have to use more sophisticated tools even just to analyze the performance of our own product.
Well, yeah, because it would be hard. Are all of you colorblind?
I'm not colorblind, but we do have several colorblind people in the company. So whenever we need to test something, we just go out and you know,
grab them.
Plenty of eyeballs.
Check this out.
Test on. Yeah, exactly.
How fascinating is this? So Now, what is your strategy? Is it all sunglasses, or is there indoor ones too?
Yeah, there is a lens. It's called the CX65, and that one is the lightest in coloration. And we recommend that one primarily for use with computers and digital media and, say, going to the movies and watching a movie or something like that.
Because that makes the movie seem just incredible. So I have I don't like going to 3D movies because I just feel nauseated and stuff. And it probably has to do with my not seeing every color perfectly. If I wore those glasses under, you know, on top of the 3D glasses go on top of those. Do have people reported that a 3D movie is a lot better?
You know, I'm not sure about the interaction with 3D, if that would help or not.
You know, just the experience of watching a movie that's in 3D. A regular movie is better, you're saying. But
I'm not sure one way or the other. I know that there's definitely people who say that they take the glasses to movies. I can't recall if the 3D movies in particular.
Oh, that's a big deal. You got to test it out. You got to test it out and report back. Because that's a big deal. Because I just avoid them because I'm like, oh, they make me sick. But I'm wondering if it would make a difference.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be back with Business Game Changers in a moment.
Get ready to rid yourself of all that is weighing you down and holding you back from living the life you want for yourself. Coming Clean, The Art of Transparency with Catherine Moss is a hit show for women in recovery who are ready to live life on purpose. Tune in and let Catherine help you live your truth one day at a time. Live each Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Super interesting stuff with these glasses. And if you want to find more information on Inchroma, come to my website at sarahwestall.com and I'll have information on how to reach them. And I will also have some videos. I'm hoping they will send me these videos so that you can see how it really works with with people for, you know, how they see color for the first time, which is just a fantastic thing. But now I'm going to welcome Gary Miller to the program, and he's going to explain how he sold his company to IBM for 7 times the multiple and the highest earning multiple IBM has ever paid. And he also helps companies. He has a company now that helps companies sell their businesses for the most they can possibly sell it for. He is going to share that with us, and hopefully we can all learn something from his wisdom. So now let's welcome Gary Miller to the program.
Hi, Gary. Welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
You sold your company back in 2000 to IBM. You had a global consulting firm, and IBM specifically bought you because of your intellectual property. And you also had a unique ability to access higher level executives, which IBM really wanted. Could you explain that to us a little bit on what, you know, why they wanted to buy your company and how that went?
I sure can. Thanks for having me on the show. I can tell you that IBM had been a client of ours for 5 years. So they had experience with our subject matter expertise and our capabilities, et cetera. Part of why they wanted us was because we invented some predictive modeling techniques that was very applicable to their client base. However, when you are dealing in the management consulting space, you typically access different executives in what's called the C-suite, the chief of technology or the,
sure,
the chief financial officer, et cetera. We had access to the higher levels in the C-suite, the CEO, the CFO, and the COO, and more often than not, those three people occupying those positions also sat on the board of directors. In the case of IBM, they were kind of capped out. They could only access the chief technology officer because IBM is a technology leader. Therefore, they really couldn't get upstairs, as we say, to make contact with and acquire major strategic engagements unless it revolved around infrastructure or the merging or combining of disparate systems, those kinds of things. So they were really capped at that thing.
So you really had a valuable asset that they wanted, because, you know, you hear IBM and you think, oh, wow, they probably had access to all levels. But it doesn't work that way in the business world. And you could come in there and you could get them access to the strategic decision makers. So because you had that, were you able to demand a higher price on the value of your company?
Well, I think the pricing, the multiple that we receive based on our EBITDA, the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, was above normal. In fact, we received among the highest they've ever paid for a consulting firm. And there were two reasons. One, you've identified the access, and then the other is that we had invented some predictive modeling techniques using the latest and greatest in technology developed by NASA and other organizations, and they were fearful that we might sell our company or that technology to one of their competitors.
So they wanted you before one of the competitors could get to you, and they gave you a price that would get you to move.
That's correct. And we chose to make that decision to sell because it was at the right time. The market was strong in terms of multiples being paid for service companies.
Yeah, you were smart. You went at the
number two.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we decided that, you know what, given where we're going, we might have to fight a long time when we did get ready to sell. If we didn't sell to IBM, we'd probably have to fight a long time to get as good a purchase price as we did. That was clearly number one.
Timing's a big deal, isn't it?
It's a huge deal. In fact, it's one of the five major considerations any business owner should take into account when they're ready to sell their company.
Sure. Okay. What is the biggest difference? I mean, I know you help a lot of companies, you know, to sell their companies. So what do you think is the biggest difference between 2000 and now?
Actually, I think it's more difficult for a business owner to sell today than it was in 2000, 15 years ago. And here are some of the reasons why. First, there is a tsunami of companies coming on the market, Sarah. And as a result of that, the competition is going to be very stiff for one company to stand out over another company in the same industry and set. And this is a result of the baby boomer generation of owners. And they own 43% of all privately held companies. And basically, you're going to have about 400,000 companies coming on the market annually compared to just a few years ago when there was around 1,400 companies coming on the market. Now, while I say that to you, there's a lot of what we call dry powder, that is money on the sideline wanting to buy companies. And so as a result of that, there's plenty of opportunity to be purchased, but there's significant competition to stand out among your peers.
Well, you know, I had someone else earlier talk about the middle market segment and that there is actually a lot of competition on investing in the middle market. Is it more that there isn't that many really strong companies that are out there, or is it that there's just a lot of companies that just aren't as exciting to be involved with?
No, there's two basic reasons why privately held companies do not sell quickly. First, the company owners overvalue them. They try to reach up and get too big a price for them. And number two, the companies are not well prepared to go to market. Those are the two major reasons. I might add, Sarah, currently, as of last year, 83% of all companies up for sale did not sell.
And what do you think is the biggest reason for that?
They are not prepared for the marketplace. And I can give you some examples of what that lack of preparedness means. Their financial statements are not audited. Their books are not clean. They don't have a strategic business plan in place. They don't have sustainable growth business models in place. Or the bench strength of their management team is shallow.
So they're kind of a
mess.
Another
reason is, they're kind of a mess. And by the way, that's one of the major areas that we focus on is helping companies prepare themselves to market. And many times that takes anywhere from 4 months to two and a half years going forward. There's three basic things that a buyer looks for in a company. One is a strong earnings growth year over year over year. Buyers want consistency. Number two, they want strong management in place. There's kind of a myth out there that if a company comes in and buys you, they're going to get rid of the management. In today's world, that's just the opposite. They want strong management in place.
Yeah, they don't want the headache, right? They want to come in and have something that works well. Okay.
That's right. And the third reason and final reason, they want a culture fit. I once did a deal with a strategic alliance for a company, a consulting company, with CenturyLink Telephone Company. That did not work out at all because the culture of a telephone company is drastically different than the culture of a consulting firm.
Well, a telecommunication company, a big one, is it's a big bureaucracy. It's like the government almost.
Almost.
Yeah. And so if you're getting a more innovative, you know, move on the fly type company, it's very difficult merged situation. I worked in at US West back in the day, and I worked in a really innovative part of that company but in order to make that happen, they actually carved out an entire space for us and then created a bubble around us so nobody would touch us. Otherwise, they knew the culture in the main company would kill the innovation. And it worked. It worked for a certain amount of time, but yeah, go ahead. So culture's a big difference.
It is. Just remember one axiom about culture. Culture eats strategy for breakfast.
It does. That's a great statement. Culture is almost everything.
It is. US West was a client of ours in the company that I sold to Paragon. In fact, we had all eight of the RBOCs and the long line carriers as clients, as one of our industry specialties was telecommunications.
Yeah.
And, as you would know, the telecommunications industry, once they went through divestiture, were kind of like bear cubs playing with themselves. They didn't know what to do, how to do it, because they'd never had to generate earnings on their own.
Exactly.
They had a captive audience. The consumer, they had protected territories, and they were able to raise their prices every time their costs went up.
They were kind of in la la land. Business doesn't, they're like the government.
Well, they were. Well, that's right. That's exactly. The only thing is they can't print money.
Well, the government can't either, right? The Federal Reserve does it. But regardless.
Yeah, they can print money, but the telephone companies can't.
Yes. So, okay. So are big companies always looking for good companies to purchase?
It depends on there's two types of growth, organic and inorganic. If their organic growth is significant and if the industry they're in is pretty stable and consistent, then typically those companies' profile would not be having a major acquisition program or what we call inorganic growth. By contrast, companies that are in high growth markets often can't grow as fast organically for a number of reasons. So they add to that growth by aggressively acquiring either competitors or supporting companies. Or they form strategic alliances or partnerships so that they can generate and maintain double-digit top-line growth numbers year over year.
And do they look for innovative companies to bring on board, like Google and Yahoo and all these companies are looking for the innovative companies to acquire Apple? But do they do that because it's so much harder in their environment to create the innovative new products once they get to a certain size?
Well, Sarah, there's three basic ways you grow in this end. You can grow, there's three different ways to grow in this end. You can build it yourself, or you can buy it, or you can make alliances with companies you need. The problem with building it yourself is it takes time. If you buy it, you may pay a premium to buy it, but you collapse the time frame and therefore you become more competitive. By contrast, if a company won't allow itself to be sold, then you can form partnerships with that company. Or if you need the technology of a much larger company than yours, you can form partnerships or alliances with those companies to acquire the use of their technology or their innovation or their inventions, whatever that may be. So that decision to acquire is a function of what is the fastest way to get to a higher top line revenue number.
But getting back to culture, you would say that it's not the culture issue with innovation isn't as big of a deal as just where they are in a pure business decision on where they can get the technology and whether they build
it. I think that's right. I think the culture issue becomes very difficult to deal with on very large bureaucratic companies. IBM stated in the purchase of our company, we want what you've got. Your billable rates are higher than ours on average. Your overhead is lower. You can turn proposals and engagements faster. We want to be able to do that. But the bottom line is that our company, even though we were a middle-sized consulting firm, we were a rounding error on IBM's balance sheet. And what happens when you try to do cultural integration is there are certain ways in which you do things. In the case of IBM, it was the IBM way. That's not to fault them for any reason. It is just the way it is. They've got their policies, practices, and procedures established.
Were they able to take a company like yours and actually integrate it into theirs without losing that benefit? I would think they would have had to carve out a space and could put a little bit of bubble around it, like, you know, the experience I had.
The answer to that question is no, they were not able to integrate the firm successfully.
Unfortunately, I do not have enough time to air Gary's full interview. So go to my website at sarahwestall.com and I'll have a link there so that you can hear the full interview there, as well as hear any of my past or any of my future podcasts that are going to be coming out on sarahwestall.com. And for now, I hope everybody has a beautiful day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.
What is a brilliant culture?
And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
There are so many resources out there for meditation, but did you know that Atana's Heart Earth Healing Meditation is available for you for free? Yes, that's right. You can receive this free healing meditation today from Atana Vadili. All you need to do is visit his website, atanamethod.com. That's A-T-A-A-N-A-method.com, and sign up. You will receive your free meditation instantly. That's atanamethod.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so, and what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the light beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of Sheer Alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, This book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vale, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests. Tune in to The Michael Shane Show the third Tuesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and connect with the ascended beings to raise your vibration and manifest the life you desire. Get ready to receive healing through the transphysical mediumship of Reverend Michael Shane and the ascended beings. Visit MichaelShane.com. That's M-Y-C-H-A-E-L, Shane.com, and call 425-971-6632 to schedule your full healing session now.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you anxious, worried, or insecure? Hi, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub. I'm the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Join me for my next breakthrough video seminar, which starts on September 10th. This program has helped thousands of people worldwide to overcome their struggles with anxiety, and I'm certain it can also help you. If you're ready to be free again and have a stronger foundation of inner peace and confidence, visit The Fear and Anxiety Solution.
Almost everyone at some time in their lives ask themselves, what am I? Most of our questions are ego-generated and simply don't address the problem of our false self. It's time to relax your ego and embody your soul. Dr. Dan Cohen, neurologist, inventor, and author, has created tools to awaken, a new way to transform from who you thought you were into what you truly are. Visit toolstoawaken.com today.